Hello and welcome to the RSNA 2020 edition of The Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Whitney Palmer. Today, I am joined by Dr. Rich Heller, Associate Chief Medical Officer and National Director of Pediatric Radiology with Radiology Partners, and Dr. Lucy Spoluto, Associate Professor of Radiology and Radiological Sciences at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Both are with me to discuss the ever-present challenge of health disparities in providing radiology services. Today, they touched on the highlights of their recent session during the RSNA annual meeting, focusing on underlying factors that result in healthcare disparities, as well as the challenges providers and facilities face to improving access to care.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for taking the time to talk with me about the issue of health disparities in radiology. Dr. Spoluto, to start with you, when we talk about health disparities in the industry, you know, this has been an ongoing conversation for years, but the conversation is changing and pivoting now to include more than just racial and ethnic disparities. What are the issues that are now being brought up and discussed?
I think when we talk about health disparities and understanding them throughout our country, the most important thing is to understand our communities and the communities we serve and how their access to care is different and the many factors, all the social determinants of health that go into the care that they receive and are able to receive. This includes whether or not they have insurance, what that insurance might be like, how much it might actually cover, things like language barriers, education barriers, housing structure, if they live in a multi-generational family right now during COVID, think about this, how they're at higher risk, what their job is like, how they can get to their care. So there are so many aspects to medical that different communities in our country receive that we need to think about as we're thinking about providing more equity.
Are there groups of individuals, though, different populations that radiologists need to, they consider when it comes to being aware and cognizant of health disparities?
So as you mentioned, one of the first things that people think of, or that's often published on, are racial and ethnic disparities in outcomes. But there are also geographic disparities between rural and urban populations. There are disparities at socioeconomic levels between lower socioeconomic status communities and higher socioeconomic communities or individuals. So it goes far beyond race and ethnicity to truly understand disparities.
All right. So then kind of stepping back in and thinking about, you know, because obviously these groups are individualized, but are there things that they have in common when it comes to making sure that radiology is able to meet their needs? You know, what are, I guess, are some of the same things that we can perhaps look at across populations?
I think it's important for us to remember that each image we see is attached to a patient, and that we're really caring for patients as individuals, and that those individual patients have their own things that they must overcome to receive medical care. That's different for each of those individuals. So we need to make our institutions accessible to all these individuals, whether it's providing educational materials at different levels, it's providing materials in different languages, or having personnel available to relay information about studies in different languages, thinking about outreach to different communities who might be at higher risk for certain cancers or certain diseases, and sharing what radiology studies have to offer these patients. I think there is a lot that we as a radiology community can do to impact the population's health.
Dr. Heller, from your perspective, are there things that the radiologists need to consider from your experience?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, thank you for including me in this. I think such an important subject. And it's one that I think is relevant to all of us in the medical community. We all have a role to play, including radiology. And, you know, as I talked about, I think the one thing that we as radiologists can do is understand that healthcare, in some senses, is a limited resource. You know, not unlike the environment, and we need to be good stewards of it. We need to protect it. We need to be careful about overutilization and sort of treat it like the environment, in the sense that, look, it's not something that we can simply keep using up and there's an infinite supply. If we can be cognizant of limited resources in radiology, we can have a bigger impact on the healthcare system. And an example of that you know, that's an abstract concept. To make it more concrete is, we in radiology have a meaningful impact on downstream utilization. There was a study by Matt Davenport at the University of Michigan, and looked at MRI utilization after head CT reports for head CTs being done for headache. And what they found is that there was variability in the probability and the variability in the chance that an MRI would be done after the head CT, but it was based on which radiologist read it. There was a lot of variability. The outcomes didn't matter. The outcomes were all the same, but there was a cost differential because there was this MRI based on which radiologist did it. There was that variability. And we know that variability is the calling card of waste, right? So the idea is we want to use best practice guidelines, use evidence-based practice to try to take waste out of this system, do things that are good for patients, but also limit unnecessary utilization of healthcare resources. Because if we do that, then we can make our healthcare resources, we can spread them out over a larger area. And I think that's one thing that radiology can do to sort of contribute to, you know, fighting these disparities and these inequities.
So then jumping off of that, and this is directed to you both, you know, when it comes to using those best practices and making sure that the radiology has the most impact that it can in finding disparities, what are the tools that radiologists need kind of in their toolkit to make that happen?
One thing that we found helpful was we actually developed a technology which we call RECO-MD, R-E-C-O, RECO-MD for recommendation. And it's a point of dictation tool so that when our radiologists are dictating, it tells them, hey, by the way, there's an evidence-based best practice recommendation for this. Do you want to insert it into your report automatically? So that way the radiologist doesn't have to stop, look it up. They don't even have to remember there is a best practice for, let's say, abdominal aortic aneurysms. So when they're dictating and they say the abdominal aorta measures 4.2 centimeters, the computer will pop up and say, hey, that's an abdominal aortic aneurysm. Do you want to insert the evidence-based best practice guideline into your report automatically? And you hit a button and it puts that into your report, into the impression, and it gives the reference. So the referring clinician now knows what to do, and they know that we're not just making it up. They can go look up the reference themselves if they're wondering, you know, why did the radiologist make this recommendation? That's evidence-based practice. And that's the idea that we can do things that are based on the evidence, based on literature, that do things that are right for the patient, but that hopefully right size utilization.
I completely agree, Rich. And I think the steps that are necessary to get there are, one, having good evidence-based medicine. So having strong research that produces evidence-based guidelines. And then it's the dissemination of these guidelines, whether it's through publication or through unique computerized tools, such as the one you're discussing, or through any other dissemination methods. But so if we publish them, like the JACR publishes excellent guidelines on recommendations for follow-up. But one other thing they also do is they publish them for clinicians, but they also publish them in a patient lay language. They've engaged a group of patient editors and patient writers to rewrite these clinician-focused guidelines into guidelines that patients can also understand. So it's the strong evidence to make the guidelines, the dissemination of the guidelines at the patient and provider level, and then leveraging new technology to implement these guidelines into our existing workflow, just at your fingertips, the way Rich is talking about. And then maybe even going one step further, that once we put those guidelines into our reports for providers, maybe we could also have those guidelines at a patient accessible level that's both education level appropriate and language appropriate.
Well, one thing we haven't talked about enough, is all of these things are great, but they only occur, you know, once we enter the system. And so it's great that we use these evidence-based best practice guidelines. That's fantastic. And it's the right thing to do for the patient. But we also need to recognize that we need to be doing it because we need to be broadening our access. That, you know, that what I talked about in my presentation was, you know, the wealthier you are, the more likely you are to have private health insurance. The more likely you are to have private health insurance, the more likely you are to have access to care. The more better access to care you have, the more likely you are to have better health outcomes. And the flip side is true too, that the less wealthy you are, the less likely you are to have good health insurance. The less good health insurance you have, whether it's Medicaid or no insurance, the less access you have, and the less access you have, you know, the worse your health outcomes are. And so while it's fantastic we have all these great tools and we're using evidence-based practice, that assumes people are actually able to access the healthcare system. You know, we'd all ideally be in Chicago right now for RSNA. And it's interesting that, you know, the magnificent mile, we all like to go shopping, you know, during RSNA, you only have to go 10 miles 10 miles, not very far, and you drop off 30 years in average life expectancy from downtown Chicago in Streeterville, where the Mag Mile is, to a different neighborhood called Inglewood, and you've got a 30-year drop-off in average life expectancy. And again, this is the same city. It's not even that far, but it just shows you that your zip code, as well as your genetic code, have a big impact on your overall health.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I would encourage anyone who has not yet watched Dr. Distinctor's opening session for RSNA this year on really global health equity and what radiology's role is in providing care to these areas across the world that have little or no access to care. It was a really inspiring talk, and I highly recommend listening to it so that we all understand as individual radiologists and as a radiology community what our responsibility is in caring for patients across the world.
As far as, you know, the fundamental components to access, you know, like you said, it only matters if a patient can be in the healthcare system. And you mentioned things like zip code, but what are some of the other fundamental components that affect access, particularly when it comes to getting a patient in for radiology services?
So things we're talking about, there's actual physical access, where you live, how far you are from a hospital. If this can be rural versus urban, if you live in a rural community and you need specialized care and you might have to go 300 miles to get that care. That's one physical component of access. But often, as he was saying, in large cities, this physical access barrier is just a matter of miles, whether it's that you're separated by a large highway or you're separated by the fact that you don't have your own means of transportation. If the hospitals with the critical specialized care that you need don't accept your insurance plan or you don't have insurance. So there are so many physical barriers to receiving care, which can be spread across many, many miles or really very few miles.
And that, I agree with everything she just said. And then to dovetail, because a different aspect, because everything she said I completely agree with, is the issue of insurance coverage. That every year since 2016, we've had an increased number of uninsured in this country. In 2019, it was around 30 million people in this country did not have health insurance. And we added millions more to the uninsured rolls that lost their employer-sponsored health insurance during this pandemic. So that's a fundamental problem we have, that people just don't have health insurance. And we know that, you know, a significant percentage of people that don't have health insurance, like I think the survey that I cited was half of people that don't have health insurance didn't have a usual source of care. One in five of people that didn't have health insurance had gone without care because they just couldn't afford it. So when we talk about, you know, how great our health system is, which it is fantastic, again, you got to break through those barriers. You got to have access to care. And part of that access to care is being able to broaden access to coverage. People need to be able to have affordable access to healthcare coverage. And I think that's probably one of the fundamental problems is people just don't have access to that. And then the public coverage that we have, if we're being honest, they have limited access as well. That's one of the studies that I cited in the talk said that only about a third of psychiatrists accepted new Medicaid patients, and only about 70% of providers accepted Medicaid at all. So even if you get Medicaid, even then you still have some hurdles to get through. And we're gonna, I suspect, you know, continue to see these problems until we have, you know, more substantial change. And as a sign of the difficulties we face, the final rule for the Medicare physician fee schedule was released last evening. And as expected from the proposed rule, it actually decreased the Medicare physician fee schedule. Now that's the conversion factor. It's how they use to pay doctors. The amount of money that CMS is proposing to use to reimburse providers in 2021 is actually lower than it was in the 1990s. I'm not talking inflation, no inflation. If you count inflation, it's much different, but just the nominal value, the flat number was actually higher in the 1990s. I think the last time it was this low was like 93, 94, like that era. So when we talk about that, that's a significant problem that, you know, we're seeing inflation going up, we're seeing all these expenses going up, and then all these provider groups that are really trying to make it, they're trying to provide access to care, particularly in rural areas, and then they're seeing these sort of hits. I mean, our emergency medicine room doctors right now, who are really working the front lines fighting the pandemic, they'll be expected to take a 6% pay cut based on this new conversion factor change. So they're working harder, they're working the front lines, they're in the face of COVID, and they're taking a 6% pay cut. And I think that's an issue that, boy, what's going to happen with that? Is that going to increase access, or is that probably going to limit access? If I had to bet, I think that's a risk to access to care, particularly for our rural areas.
Another really interesting piece of the insurance discussion is that insurance coverage, the percentage of people who have insurance coverage varies widely across the country. It's not the same across the board. There are different areas of the country with higher rates of uninsured patients, and it also varies widely by race and ethnicity, with higher percentage of uninsured patients from the African-American population to a much higher percentage of uninsured patients from the Hispanic and Latinx populations. So that's a huge component of disparities in access to care across the country. There are also certain states that offered Medicaid expansion and some that didn't, and your access to care in a Medicaid expansion state is much different if you're a Medicaid patient than if you're not in a Medicaid expansion state. And then there are some services offered in certain states. For example, in Tennessee, we have a program called the Tennessee Breast and Cervical Screening Program, which is a state and federally funded program that provides mammography screening and cervical cancer screening for underinsured and uninsured women, which is, you know, an awesome program for these women who might not have access to women's healthcare services for screening. What's problematic is that not all institutions accept reimbursement from programs like this. So there are a lot of ways that we could start to impact care just by recognizing what the disparities are and how we as a system can work to overcome them.
So given that that's the playing field now, and that that conversation about how to overcome it does need to happen, what are some recommendations or points to consider that radiologists should keep in mind?
First step is just understanding that these disparities exist and what is driving them and what the different social determinants of health that might impact an individual's care or a certain community's care. Once we understand those disparities, we can start to look at individual provider level and institutional and organization level change, and then eventually national policy change that is necessary to drive change to overcome disparities and ultimately achieve a more equitable healthcare system.
And I would want to echo that, saying that I think education is the first part, because I think we as physicians do have a responsibility to be leaders in this, and to make sure people understand nationally that this is a real problem, that we're seeing, you know, some people coming in with, you know, late stage disease because they just didn't have access to care. You know, they knew it was there, they felt something, but boy, you know, they knew that going to the doctor would be expensive and they couldn't afford it, and there was this and everything, and they're presenting with later disease. And we need to be the ones saying, hey, that this is a problem. We have an issue with people not being able to get access to care. And one of the barriers, there's many, but one of the big barriers is this issue of coverage.
All right. Well, given that that coverage is such an issue, and again, the radiologists are facing this pay cut that's coming, what are some of the, I guess, challenges or stumbling blocks that may exist kind of coming down the road to make it harder for radiologists to reach out and open the door for access a little bit more?
Well, I think the policy level problems are some of the biggest barriers for individual radiologists to overcome. As Rich has described, there's not a lot we can do as individual radiologists to overcome what different insurance providers cover and what insurance our institution may or may not accept. And so that's something that I find frustrating as an individual radiologist, that I might want to provide better care or more outreach to a certain patient population, it might be limited to do that. So I think that's a big hurdle to overcome.
But I'm impressed by, I agree with that, and I'm impressed by, you know, efforts that go into the community to offer free screening examinations in the community and doing programs like that. I mean, if I'm being honest, I think it's disappointing we have to do that, right? That's not the idea. We shouldn't have to do that. But reality is that, yeah, these communities, that if we're not proactive about outreach and going into them and doing things that will make sure they're aware and educated, and I think that's part of what we as physicians need to be aware of and need to be, you know, sort of educating our colleagues about.
I think cancer screening is a wonderful example of how radiology can make an impact in this area, which includes breast cancer screening, lung cancer screening, colon cancer screening through CT colonography, reaching out to populations who are at higher risk for these cancers, who may not be being screened for these cancers at all, as Rich has said, through whether it's mobile vans, mobile mammography vans, mobile CT scanners, or educational outreach to communities who just aren't aware that they're supposed to be screened for these. And then eventually maybe pushing the needle all the way to getting coverage for these patients to pay for these screenings, which the model has been set in breast cancer screening, but can we push the needle so that we can also cover lung cancer screening and colon cancer screening for these patients?
Right. Well, then looking forward and kind of taking two roads, if we're able to address these access to healthcare disparities and make an improvement, what does the future look like for radiology? And on the flip side, if enough isn't done to make a difference, what kind of problems are we facing?
Yeah, I think radiology is really at the center of so much patient care. If you think about most people, you know they've had a radiology study at some part. We cover every part of the body. We work with every specialist. We work with adult specialists and pediatric specialists and cancer specialists. We work with the whole medical care team. So I think we have a bigger opportunity to impact care and to impact public health than any other specialty does.
I would agree with that. In fact, it's interesting that the title of my talk, All Things Being Equal, was inspired by the artist Hank Willis Thomas. And if you don't know Hank Willis Thomas, it's worth looking up. He's a very interesting, provocative artist, African-American, whose work deals with sort of issues of the African-American history. And he does it in very graphic works that are very, some of them have to do with like the language of advertising. And I love that phrase he took. It's his current exhibition right now, All Things Being Equal. Because, look, you know, if you walk around RSNA, typically when you can walk around RSNA, you see all the great tools we have. Like all this, I mean, fantastic stuff. I mean, one of our biggest issues right now is we're finding so many more things. We got to figure out what those things mean. Like with ultrasound, we're seeing so much more stuff than you ever saw before because the machines are so fantastic. What does that even mean when you're picking up these little tiny things on ultrasound? And that's what we tend to focus on so much. It's so easy to fall into that trap. But maybe we take a step back and say, you know, all things being equal, yeah, we've got these great tools, but that's great for this segment of the population. What else can we be doing? And that's, I think, the question that I'm so honored that I was invited to speak in the session is really focusing on is what else can we be doing? It's great that we've got these tools. It's great that we're doing all this fantastic stuff. We need to keep doing that. But what else can we be doing? And I think there is more than radiology is doing and that more than we can do, which is why I think that this was such a wonderful session. I was so pleased to be invited. So thank you, by Dr. Buda, for including me in this session.
Oh, thank you, Rich. And thank you to all the other speakers. And a huge thank you to Efren Flores, my co-moderator, for helping to design the event and put together this outstanding speaker list.
Well, then to kind of step back to a 50,000 foot level, you know, to jump off of what you were saying, Dr. Heller, when it comes to, you know, what else can radiology do? What are the takeaway messages that you would want providers and people who have attended RSNA to, or this virtual session of RSNA to walk away with from this session?
I'm going to quote Dr. Flores here, who always says that health equity is everyone's responsibility. We all have to think about it. We all have to be aware. We have to be thinking to the future and how we as radiologists can impact patient care. As Dr. Heller said, we do great work. We have access to great tools, but what else can we do to impact the care for population health across, you know, not only our country, but the world?
I agree with that. And it's funny. So my talk was inspired by, when the initial idea was a book by Hugh Reinhardt, who was a famous health economist who passed away. And he talked about, and I'll get the quote wrong, and in fact, the quote didn't even end up making my final talk, that, you know, for time constraints, I actually ended up cutting this quote, but it was a wonderful quote, and he talks about, you know, to what extent are we to be our poor and sicker brothers and sisters keepers in terms of healthcare? And I think that's the fundamental question I think we should need to be thinking about is, to what extent are we, you know, as physicians, what is our obligation to provide care, to help care at a national level, for our poor and sicker brothers and sisters? An interesting question to think about that Professor Reinhardt asks to consider.
Well, Dr. Spoluto, Dr. Heller, I appreciate you both taking the time today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting us. And thank you to everyone who participated in this RSNA session on health equity. And thank you to everyone who attended. I look forward to working with you all in the future.
Thank you for including us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Drs. Heller and Spoluto, for joining me. And thank you for listening to The Reading Room. And as always, visit www.diagnosticimaging.com for the latest in radiology news and current coverage of RSNA 2020.